Dominic Company, 102.5, 106.3, the game, streaming live on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook Live. We are live from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios. Bridgestone Arena, Preds and Edmonton Oilers tonight, right here, 7 o'clock on 102.5, the game. So, I am a believer. Ian, are you familiar with the Everything Must Go liquidation sale?
Sure, I've heard of them.
I am in favor of the Tennessee Titans posting up signs that say, going out of business, everything must go, sell, sell, sell. I actually have
everything?
A friend. Everything? Everything. Well, I'll explain this in a second. I have a friend that works in retail, you know, as like a, you know, higher up in retail. And he told me that when you see a business that has like an everything must go sale, what they do is apparently they outsource to another company who comes in and does all the marketing and puts up all the signs and brings in their own salespeople and they mark it down to whatever. And then that company gets a cut of whatever the money ends up being one way or another. Which is kind of odd, right?
I guess so.
But apparently that's how they do it. Well, I am in favor of an everything must go sale, and I'm going to tell you why. Because if I thought the quarterback was worth saving, then I would say, well, you know, you got to protect him and you got to give him options and got to give him I'm out on the quarterback. If he proves me wrong, I'll admit it. But I'm out. So everyone wants to know, we need to sell. Well, okay. I'm going to tell you what I think you can get, and I'm going to tell you who I think you can sell. And we'll start at the very, very top of the list with the most tradable Tennessee Titans assets.
Number one.
DeAndre Hopkins. And I think that's pretty obvious that DeAndre Hopkins is the most likely trade asset. He would be the most valued trade asset somewhere. Charles Robinson today said Pittsburgh is dying to trade for a receiver. And we know Kansas City needs a receiver. And so I think if you ate the money, so you'd have to restructure Hopkins' deal, give it to him in a signing bonus, and then trade him. If you ate the money, I think you could get a fourth-round pick. I was a little surprised by a third-round pick for Amari Cooper. But if you remember, the Cleveland Browns, they have the highest payroll in the NFL, and they have the most salary cap space because they restructure everybody all the time. They had already done that with Amari Cooper, so there wasn't a lot of money left for Buffalo to take on for Amari Cooper. So they give up a third for Cooper. If you eat the money on Hopkins, I think you can probably look at a fourth in 2025 as a potential return. Maybe a fifth you'd have to take, but you're not going to get a third, I would assume, for DeAndre Hopkins, even if you ate the money. But he's the most tradable asset.
Number two.
Nick Folk, the kicker. You know, this is one that there are a handful of teams that are on the carousel. And again, if you were contending at all, I would say, hey, you got to hang on to Nick Folk because he has taken you off the carousel. But you're not. And he's a free agent at the end of the year. And he's about 87 years old. He's like Gary Anderson. He's got that one little bar on the face mask at this point. It's grandfathered in. I think there's a team out there that would be so desperate at kicking. And I circle Green Bay as kind of the team that I'm like, man, they are desperate for kicking. And they lost a playoff game last year because they couldn't kick. And so would Green Bay say, you know what, let's give him a fifth. Let's get Nick Folk. Let's get off the carousel. Let's stop trying out with Narvison and Carlson and all these other guys they've tried. Let's just get Nick Folk and do it. I'm going to set the asking price or the expectation price at a fifth-round pick in 2025 for Nick Folk.
Number three.
Quandre Diggs. Now I'm going to set his price at a fifth-round pick as well. Again, safety's not that valuable of a position, and Quandre Diggs isn't one of the better safeties in the league, but he is a starting safety. He's a solid player, and again, if you're a contender and you need a safety, Quandre Diggs is your guy. He plays. He doesn't get hurt very often. He's been on good teams. He's got a ton of experience. He doesn't make a lot of money. He's not signed after this year. Quandre Diggs would be a guy that I think that you would absolutely circle and say, hey, this is a guy we can add.
Number four.
Dylan Raidens. And I think Dylan Raidens is worth a sixth-round pick. And I will say, you know, Dylan Raidens has been the second-best offensive lineman. If I had any hope for this young quarterback, which I do not, if I had any hope for the young quarterback, I would say you cannot trade your starting right guard. can't do it. Because you need to protect your young quarterback, even if it means you're not going to win games. Like, I'm not mad at the Titans for not trading Derrick Henry last year. Because I think the young quarterback needed Derrick Henry. In fact, I think the young quarterback needs Derrick Henry on the team right now. But I have made up my mind on the young quarterback. I think Raiden's would have a lot of value. Again, a sixth-round pick in 2025, but for trade purposes, that's value. I think teams would want Raiden's because they would look at it and say, well, we need a guard. Well, you can play guard. We need a guy who can be a sixth offensive lineman that can play guard and tackle. Or we've got a tackle that's out for 6 weeks that's going to be coming back, but instead we got a guy, Raiden's can be that guy. His contract expires at the end of the year. He's on a rookie deal. In fact, I would circle the Jets as a potential spot for Dylan Raiden's. But I would say sixth-round draft choice in 2025 as a potential trade partner for Dylan Raiden's.
Number five.
Sebastian Joseph Day. I actually really like Sebastian Joseph Day. I think he's come in. He's making $4 million this year. I think he's done a solid job as a rotational defensive tackle. I think you're looking at a sixth-round pick in this year's draft or a seventh-round pick if you were to move him. You know, again, Malik went for a seventh-round pick in this year's draft. So Sebastian Joseph Day, again, I could kind of say seventh-rounder on him, sixth-rounder on him. I think somebody, again, defensive line depth, there's an injury somewhere. San Francisco, for instance, they've got a history with Sebastian Joseph Day. They lost a guy for the entire – I think they lost Javon Hargrave for the entire year. They don't have some of the depth they've had in the past. A guy like Javon Kinlaw is with the Jets now. I would circle Sebastian Joseph Day, and again, sixth or seventh round pick in the 2025 draft.
Number six.
Tyler Boyd. Again, I don't know how many teams are looking for a slot-only receiver, which is what Tyler Boyd is for the most part. And he's only played in Cincinnati and I guess now here. So it's not like we know, oh, this coach he'd be a fit with or that coach he'd be a fit with or this one because Jay Gruden's out of the league and Zach Taylor in Cincinnati didn't want him and Brian Callahan in Tennessee, they have him. But Tyler Boyd is a reliable pass catcher. And so, again, 1 year, $4 million. Not making a lot of money. Don't know what the bonus was. If you paid him a lot up front, that means there's probably nothing left to pay. In fact, I wouldn't rule out Kansas City. If they strike out on some of these other receivers, I would not rule them out as a place for Tyler Boyd to go play the slot, knowing that they've got an outside guy like Xavier Worthy. Now, they signed Juju Smith-Schuster, so he'll probably play that role. But I would not rule out Tyler Boyd. I'd put him on the list, and I think you can get a seventh-round draft pick if you were to trade Tyler Boyd. Again, you're not shattering the earth here with what you're acquiring, but if you want something, if you want, again, and everything must go sale is not a we're going to try to make the most money. It's a we're going to try to make some money. And so I'd say a seventh round pick for Tyler Boyd.
Number seven.
Daniel Brunskill. You know, Daniel Brunskill doesn't play here, but he's got offensive line versatility. I think you're looking at a seventh round pick in next year's draft. If you were to try to trade Daniel Brunskill, and even then, he's making $3.5 million this year. I think the money might be a little prohibitive, but offensive linemen, especially veteran offensive linemen, they've kind of become like corners in a sense that you can never have enough. Now, he can't play here, so it'd have to be a place that knows him, like San Francisco, maybe Cleveland, although it looks like they're selling, so I don't know why they would do that. But I would put Daniel Brunskill on the trade block. And again, the expectation is a seventh rounder for Brunskill in next year's draft.
Number eight.
Last one is Ernest Jones. And I don't exactly know what you would get in exchange for Ernest Jones. You traded a sixth rounder in next year's draft for Ernest Jones, but I believe you got like a seventh rounder or something in return as part of the deal for Ernest Jones. It's a very, very minor deal in order to get Ernest Jones. Ernest Jones is on a rookie contract, not making a lot of money, and his contract expires at the end of the year, similar to that of Dylan Raiden's. He's a solid player. He's not a good player. He's not a great player. He's not a special player, but he's a solid player. So I'm going to label him. I don't really know what the expectation is. I'm going to label him as a seventh rounder in this year's draft. So you traded a sixth rounder for Ernest Jones, you know, in next year's draft. So a seventh rounder in this year's draft. So Hopkins, I think you're looking at a fourth if you eat the money. Folk, a fifth. Diggs, a fifth. Radins, a sixth. Sebastian Joseph Day, a sixth or a seventh. Boyd, a seventh. Brunskill, a seventh next year. And Ernest Jones, a seventh in this year's draft. Ian, that's a lot of seventh-round draft choices if you decide that everything must go.
Lots of cold McDonald's line up. Come on down.
Lot of Colton Dowells. A lot of, again. But again, the thing with these trade chips, the one thing I will say is.
Now you can package and move up a little.
Well, I don't think you really do that. But I think what you can do is around free agency time, you know, this year, is if there's a team that, you know, they're trying to get Johnny to take a pay cut, but he's a good player, but he don't want to take a pay cut. So they're going to release him if they don't. And so then you could say, well, what do you think? And then I think you could do a seventh round pick, and I think you could do something like that. So that would be at least a little bit of an added benefit. And then again, you know, with every shot you're taking something. Apparently Green Bay signed Brandon McManus. Good for them. Because as soon as he was found not guilty or whatever by the NFL, I was like, Green Bay needs to go sign him. 615-737-1025. If you think I have hot takes, Paul Kaharsky had an opinion about a trade yesterday that is honestly one of the craziest things I have ever heard in my life. That's next, 1025 The Game.
Trades the last couple of days. Just what have your conversations been like with Rand and Chad about setting yourself up before the deadline, your opinions on selling, buying, input?
I let those guys handle most of that right now. I got enough on my plate. That's you know, we'll have conversations if those calls come in, but most of my focus is fully on trying to get us ready to go play Buffalo and all the games coming up after that too. So they handle the trade deadline. That's personnel's job, and if things come up, I'll be in the mix of it in the conversations. But other than that, I'm not in there doing a whole lot of it. They're the ones, you know, if there's something going on, they're running that show.
That was a very Family Feud moment right there from Brian Callahan. I don't know if you guys ever watched the game show Family Feud, but Steve Harvey will go around and say, okay, we asked 100 people, what is the number one thing you forget in the bathroom? And then he'll ask the question and somebody will say something like, your puppy. And it's like, I mean, that's, and Steve will look at them like they're stupid, and then we'll call them stupid. But the whole family, when they're waiting to see it, they're like, good answer, good answer, good answer. Good answer on Brian Callahan's part, being like, hey, man, the trade deadline, that's them, that's not me, I don't know. So I got to give this Paul Kaharsky take. Because if I said what Paul Kaharsky said, he would go on the morning show and say, and then Stilly in the afternoon, at the blah, 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 blah. So you got to hear this. This was yesterday, Thursday, was it? This was yesterday on Robbie and Rex Road. This is what Paul thinks the Tennessee Titans need to do.
I think Simmons is a tough trade. You know, I talked to somebody in the league that was like, people will like Simmons. There are people that will like Simmons. But that contract is massive.
Yeah.
You know? And so, yeah, if you think a defensive tackle is getting you through this year, you know, and helping you, maybe. But taking on that contract is an awful lot. I think it would be healthy for the Titans to trade Simmons to get a pick. It's not going to be a first by any means. But to get a pick and to force a restart of leadership on defense, because I think his leadership on defense has been generally oversold.
Okay. So Paul Kaharsky says they should trade Jeffrey Simmons and not get a first-round pick in return. What? Like, you guys say that I have hot takes and I'm crazy. He says I'm crazy. Trading Jeffrey Simmons and saying, I mean, look, you need to do it. You're not going to get a first, but you should do it anyway. He's saying you should trade Jeffrey Simmons and not get a first. So, a second-round pick? You trade Jeffrey Simmons for a second-round pick. Holy crap. And let me say this. I'm not a Jeff Simmons guy. I think he's a whiner. I think he's a better passenger than a driver in terms of the leadership train. Like, I think he's good to have on the cover of the media guide when your real leaders are the four other guys around him. But you don't get better at football this year or next year by getting a second round pick for Jeffrey Simmons. Unless you turn that second round pick into A.J. Brown, which is possible, but not likely. You don't get better. And I'm not even talking about better this year. Jeffrey Simmons is under contract for next year. Like, he's a part, he has to be part of the solution, not part of the problem. And if his antics are so bad, or his leadership is so bad, that you just have to get rid of him the way that the Philadelphia Eagles had to get rid of Terrell Owens, even though they were a good team without T.O., but a great team with T.O. If you have to do that with Jeffrey Simmons, you got problems. Because I know, I've watched for 5 years, you compete at a level with Simmons on the team, and I'm sure Simmons was the same level crybaby that he is at times now. But a second rounder for Jeffrey Simmons? What? That's crazy. I mean, the Titans, for instance, wouldn't trade T'Vondre Sweat for 2 seconds. Remember, again, we're talking about that Rams trade, and the Rams got the second this year, and then they moved back, or Carolina got the second from the Rams, and they moved back to 52. Like, if you think T'Vondre Sweat is so valuable that you're not going to take 2 seconds for T'Vondre Sweat, you're definitely not going to take 1 second rounder for Jeffrey Simmons. And I don't know about you guys. I've given up on 2024. I don't think the quarterback is worth salvaging. And because I don't think the quarterback's worth salvaging, I don't value winning at all this year. I don't think that, you know, winning and giving us confidence and making this and doing that, I don't think that that does anything. But I am trying to win in 2025 and 2026. And I'm convinced that trading Simmons just means that you'll have to go get another Jeffrey Simmons. If you trade Simmons today, you have to go get another Jeffrey Simmons tomorrow. It's kind of like you traded A.J. Brown. Well, now you got to go out and you got to go sign DeAndre Hopkins. And then you got to go sign Calvin Ridley because you haven't replaced A.J. Brown. So I think we could talk about how they coach Simmons and hold him accountable. And I'd like him to be treated like an adult and not constantly make excuses for him and laud him for being a leader when he's out there chewing buck off in the sideline. But trade him for a second round pick? No. I heard that and I was like, oh my God. If I had a 2 o'clock segment, the 2 o'clock segment was, I think they should trade Simmons for a second round pick. They'd go, everybody on the text line and Twitter, they'd go nuts every time. They'd say, you're just mad Simmons got mad at Buck and not you. That's why you want to trade him. They think it's like personal or something. I think, again, don't call me crazy if you're going to say go do that. Somebody texts in and says Simmons is not worth a first. You don't trade Simmons. You build around Simmons. Oh, my goodness. I think they should trade Simmons for a second. Well, he didn't say for a second. He said not for a first. So what, a third?
Whatever you can get. Best you can get. Best offer. Give me your best offer.
Oh, my God. My best offer is that he plays better. That's my best offer. Go play better. I'm not getting rid of you because then I have to go get another one of you, and I'd just rather have the you that I already have that I'm already paying $23.5 million. Go play better.
What about Sweat?
What do you mean?
Couldn't he, you know, become kind of move into that position?
He's not even DeNico Autry right now, and I want him to go be Jeff Simmons?
Well, I mean, Simmons is not a big sacker.
No, but Simmons is a much better sacker than Sweat has seemed to be at this point.
Maybe.
Again, no, I'm keeping the guy I have now. Crazy talk. Hal's up next here, live from Bridgestone Arena. Hey, join 102.5 The Game and Big Joe Dubin from 11 a.m. to 1 o'clock this Saturday at Hope Fest 2024, a family-friendly festival celebrating hope found in the faith and recovery community. The event will be held at the Bethel Church of Nazarene at 455 Broadmoor Drive in Nashville from 11 to 2 p.m. with free food, games for the kids, mental health and recovery resources available. Take advantage of that if you need to, seriously. The Tennessee Titans Alumni Association will be on hand with their vaccination clinic, and there are more details at thegamenashville.com slash events. Nashville's best deal this week is Staley's Chicago Italian Dining right here in Nashville, winners of numerous best of awards. This is truly one of the best kept secrets in Nashville. Staley's Chicago Italian Dining brings amazing Italian food to the South, including original Italian beef sandwiches, Vienna style Chicago hot dogs, and the best Euro south of Chicago. Head to thegamenashville.com/deals now to get half off a $20 gift card while supplies last. Hal Gill joins us on the program for the first time this season. Harold, it is so good. We haven't talked in forever. It's so good to see you.
I know. It's been nice, huh?
You've missed the show, haven't you?
I sure have. Well, I miss hockey season, you know, but it's not all rainbows and roses in the hockey season. You have to do this, too. So this is good.
It's also not all rainbows and roses right now in Predator Land, where they're 0-3.
Sure isn't.
And they're playing Edmonton tonight, who always comes in here and scores about 15 goals with Dreisaitl and McDavid every time they show up. What is the biggest problem right now with the team? Why have they not been able to get off the schneid? And what I would call three frustrating games that were frustrating for separate reasons.
All right, well, okay. Are you going to tell us the reasons, or do you want me to tell you?
Well, you're the expert, right?
All right. Now we're talking. Thank you, Jared. He finally admitted
it.
I
thought it was a bad period against Dallas.
It was. Here's what it was. Games 1 and 2, Dallas and Detroit, they played well. They did some good things. They had some spurts where they weren't very good. Lost maybe 5 minutes in each game where they weren't as sharp as they could have been. But they could have won those games. And so I'm not worried about that. Last game was a tough one. You had the Kraken. You didn't get the lead. You gave up two goals with some sloppy defensive zone coverage. And then you made the comeback, right? Okay, we're coming around. We're figuring it out. They did make the comeback. And then the third period comes around, and it was like, whew, they just made poor decisions. Like over-pursuing on the forecheck. You have three guys caught down low. You need to have an F3. I tell my son's 14U team, everyone, you need to have a high forward. That's just good hockey. They didn't have a high forward. It cost them. Gave up a goal. They over-pursued in the D zone. They didn't protect the center of the ice. You know, not to say that you can't run with the play and move with the play, but you have to be a little bit responsible, especially when you're not winning. You need to have a detail for the defensive side of the puck. So I was disappointed. I know the players, the coaches, they were all disappointed with that third period. That was not good enough. But I think for, you know, you had six periods, maybe eight periods where they were good and like with gaps in there. But that third period was not good. And I hope they come out and respond. That's what I'm looking for is that response tonight.
So it's early in the season, and I try not to get too worked up one way or another. But it does feel like it's kind of like probably a cloud over the team right now. It's like, get off the schneid and then start worrying about, you know, which line combinations are the best for this group as they try to jump. But there's something about this, like, if they don't win tonight, then it's 0-4. And then all of a sudden there's all this pressure on Saturday to not be 0-5. And then there's the Bruins.
Oh, yeah.
There's something to that I find very disconcerting.
Yeah, no, that's a very real – that's a mentality that you have to get through. You have to get, you know – you need to have confidence to score goals. You need to score goals to get confidence. And the bottom line is no one's going to do it for you. You have to work for it. You have to go out there. You know, okay, Stamkos hit post. Like, okay, he's got to dial it in and get it in the inside of the post. You know, it's like, okay, but, you know, it's not just one guy that is not performing. It's a team thing. It's a team dynamic. So you switch up the lines. You change them up. You know, something's got to click. And you know, I think it was, you know, they got a spurt of energy after Marchessault got in a little scruffle there. He took a bad hit, and he turned around. He got fired up. I think the team responded after that. Those are little things that you have to kind of get through. And you're at home. Sometimes it's harder at home to turn things around. You can't play a gritty, hard road game, defensively stingy when you're at home because you feel like you need to excite the crowd. You need to get going. So, but they need that right now. So I think there's a lot of things going around in their head. The bottom line is you need to go out, work hard, work as a team, and get yourself out of it and get your teammate out of it. And that comes with, you know, some sacrifices. I want to go score goals. Well, I got to play defense first. You know, sometimes you got to lock it down first and then push it out.
So I had Barry on the show. Hal Gill with us here on the program. I had Barry on the show on Tuesday, and I said, Barry, I think the problem is that, which, by the way, shows you that I'll say whatever I think. It doesn't matter. I'll tell him whatever I think, whoever it is, whatever.
You'll tell Gretzky how to pass it.
They have five top six forwards right now. That, I think, is the problem, is that they're looking for that guy to center that second line. It looks like they're going to go back to Tommy Novak. I'm not really a believer in Tommy Novak, but I understand why they're going to give him another crack at it. Who needs to be the guy, or what do they need to find in that sixth guy that can play with Stamkos and Marchessault, and then get those guys going at the level that they've shown kind of flashes that they still have in their game?
Yeah, look around. There's not too many teams that you look at and go, that's the total package. That's everything. Right? There's, you know, there's going to be a gap here. There's going to be, you know, we're top heavy with the salary cap the way it is. You're going to be top heavy at one thing. You're going to, you know, you're going to be weak on another thing. You know, like, you kind of have to deal with those little weaknesses. But, you know, Tommy Novak has made some plays. I think he has two goals, and I feel like he's made some plays. Evangelista and him seem to have some chemistry. Like, I don't think Tommy Novak is the problem. I think there's a lot of people looking around, looking at other people to do the job. But I think as a team, they need to come together. I think, you know, you're pointing at this line or this guy or this, you know, that's not the problem. I think it's a team-wide thing. And I think, you know, Brunette would probably tell you, hey, well, I got to be better too. I got to make sure that these guys are in a position to play and compete, not look to the guy next to him to make the play. I think it's a full team thing, and they're just figuring it out. And that's the funny part about playing NHL now. When I was playing, when I came in the league, we could lock it down, 1-2-2 forecheck, and clog up the trap in the neutral zone. And it was pretty consistent every night. You knew what you were going to get. Now it's a high-flying game. There's a ton of skill out there, and you're taking chances, and you have a lot of movement, and so it's tough to really lock it down and rely on defense to win and to slow teams down and to grind it out. You kind of have to play, and you have to play with confidence, but they have to play with confidence together. And so I think you're looking at different lines trying to work together. You leave them together longer, maybe they develop that chemistry, but they don't have it right away, so you change the lines. And so they're trying to feel things out, and I think it's just a matter of time before they get it. There's too many, you know, you look at this team, there's too many good players, too much leadership in the locker room, too many guys that care too much about this team and what they do and their profession and how they handle themselves. They're going to get out of it. It's just, how do they do that and when do they do that?
So that's why I think they just need that first win.
Yeah.
And then it's like, okay, all right, we got the pressure of trying to get the first win. Now let's just get to work.
Or that first goal, you know, like that good feeling that, okay, we're back. And then it kind of grows. And I think it's hard. Back in the day, you just go out and fight, right? Like, if things aren't going right, let's get in a Donnybrook. Everyone's chucking them. There's gloves all over the ice. And you bond together as a team, and then you go and win games. And you can't do that anymore. You got to work through this stuff, and you got to work as a team without that stingy defense fight mentality. You got to go play, and you got to work through it that way.
Hal Gill's with us on the program. Hal, what is the deal with Andrew Brunette's system? Like, what makes it so complicated that even Roman Josi took half a season before he really meshed with it? And now I think there's a little bit of that with the new guys they've added, of getting the system under the belt. What is so special about his system that does that?
Yeah, I think what Bruno wants is a fast, relentless pursuit of the puck. If you look at the O'Reilly, Forsberg, Nyquist, you look at that line, and when they play well, a lot of times they lose the puck, right? They're in a little scrum in the corner, and they're doing all these little plays, and they lose it, but then they get it right back. And then they get the puck, and then they boom, 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 score a goal. And it's not always like the pretty passing play. It becomes pretty because they battle for it. You know, they're relentless on pucks. And I think offensively, they are trying to extend plays. They're not just rimming it around the boards. They're not just killing plays. they're trying to extend plays in a tight area, and that works. And that's their system offensively. Defensively, it's supposed to be a quick puck movement, get it up, move it, anticipate that it's moving, and work together. And when it's off and you don't win those battles, and then you're caught on the wrong side. Mm-hmm. And that's the risk of playing this way, is you're playing fast, you're risking those turnovers, but you got to, you know, Brady Shea needs to get the puck, move it quick. And for a long time, it's been, okay, let's bring it, control it, let's get it and move it, and I'll join the rush, whereas now it's get it, move it into an area that we win another battle. Let's keep it moving. Let's keep it moving. And it's a little bit quicker, and I think when it works, it's really hard to play against, because you defensively, you can't set up and stop it. It's already happened. And so it's like, whoa, I'm a step behind. And then it goes up the ice, and that's when they're doing it well. They're moving the puck fast, and it's really hard to play against that.
Quickly, last one for you. I'm not going to say, why is it that Edmonton comes in here and McDavid and Draisaitl always take over the building? Because they are two of the best players in the world.
Yeah.
And that's why they do it. But what can the Predators do to keep tonight from being another one of those Leon Draisaitl nights?
It's really hard to do that, because these guys are they're awesome. They're
the best players in the world.
But I think the biggest thing is playing that game where you're moving it up and you're moving it quick, and you're forcing these guys to go all the way down so you can get your gaps. If you don't have your gap on Connor McDavid, you're done. You know, like, I've seen so many defensemen just go up, lock it up, and then turn around and skate as fast as they can, trying to match his speed. If you have your gap and you're in his face already, then you can slow him down. You can slow him down enough that someone from the backside can help you out. You know, if you have Connor McDavid one-on-one with a full sheet of ice, there's not too many guys that can stop him. So you need to play that fast game where you're getting pucks and transitioning up so that the D can get up and the forwards can get up and get in position, so that when he does get the puck, he's going to get hounded right away. Because the second he picks up speed and it happens fast, he's deadly. And so it's a challenge. It's going to be another challenge tonight. But I think this team knows, and maybe that's what they need. They need that urgency of, oh, boy, we can't take a shift off here because we'll look like a fool.
Or take a stupid penalty, because you put them on the power play, I mean, it's going in the back of the net.
Yeah, they're just there's too much. And that's the other thing. You're shorthanded. You're just giving them that much more room to move. And then they start buzzing and moving around. And their power play does not look like a static power play that you'll ever see. It looks like Red Army just – and good luck trying to read that and read where you're – biggest threat is, because you have too many weapons.
Hal Gill will be on the Bally's broadcast tonight. Hal, good to see you.
It's good to see you. Hey, in all seriousness, it's nice to be back talking to you, and because that means hockey's back.
Hey, I asked you questions without telling you what I thought and asking for.
I know. That was exciting. That was exciting.
Preds game day's next.
Except now you get your next segment. You get to say whatever.
Predators game day is presented by TJ Anderson Homes and Benchmark Realty, online at tjandersonhomes.com. Get your house seen, heard, and sold with TJ Anderson. The Predators tonight 0-3, and they do not need to be 0-4. That would be bad. And so the one problem is that it's Edmonton, and Edmonton started off 1-3, but they do have the two best players probably in the world in Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl. And the thing that's crazy is that McDavid is the best player in the world, but when Draisaitl comes into this building, he is the best player that ever lived. And I am worried about that tonight. So our final thought, our key to the game is, do not let Leon Draisaitl go off. If the Predators lose and Draisaitl doesn't score, I'll take it as a plus. If they win, I'll be ecstatic. Max has the pregame show. That's next. Stillman and Company. We'll see everybody tomorrow, too.